Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of probation after death. Thank you all so much for joining us. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, United States of America. And Florence, we will start with our prayer.
Yes, this prayer is from Watches, Prayers, and Argument, page 140 to 141. Be like a little child. Turn your thoughts to love and say, oh, love, just take me in. Give me one mind, one consciousness, and make me love my neighbor as myself. Let your heart cry out to divine love. A child cries out to its mother for more light, more truth, more love. Ask love for what you need and for what love has to give. Then take it and demand of yourself to rise up and live it. God will direct you in all your ways if you trust him. Faith must take hold before sight or fruition, and this faith will, when instructed in divine science, become understanding, and you will have no doubts, but every proof of his promise, lo, I am with you always. Trust him, dear. Read daily the Bible and science and health. And pray the prayer of our Lord in your own words. Ask for his kingdom to come, for love, truth and love to govern all your desires, aims and motives, to feed you with faith and a clear knowledge of good, to make you patient, forgiving, long-suffering and merciful, compassionate, even as the dear God is thus to you, and you desire him to be. And thus reflect this God good in all his qualities. My desire is that this year shall be crowned with mercies for you and all. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you, Florence. That Watches, Prayers, and Arguments. Oh, my goodness. It's one thing after the next. Wow. Thank you. All righty. Karen.
Okay. Watch number 127. Watch lest you exalt the process called mental argument to the point where you consider it to be more important than that state of spiritual mindedness that reflects the spirit and heals without the argument. Argument belongs to the transitional state, or second degree, as given on page 115 of Science and Health, since spiritual sense does not argue, but knows. When you argue the truth, you acknowledge the presence of something in you that does not know the truth, and therefore that needs to be convinced of it. The process of argument might represent the effort needed to whip the human mind into line so that it will cease to interfere with the demonstration of truth. Surely argument would not be necessary for one who acknowledged no reality in the human mind. A book agent comes to your door. There is a difference between stating that you are not interested in what he has to offer and declaring this with conviction and authority, or listening to his sales talk and then seeking to refute his assertions one by one. The following quotations, gathered from various sources, give some insight into our leader's thought about the process of argument. On page 454 of Science and Health, she writes, quote, remember that the letter and mental argument are only human auxiliaries to aid in bringing thought into accord with the spirit of truth and love, which heals the sick and the sinner, end quote. Quote, I sometimes think that argument hinders the work by materializing the thought. Hold with God. Jesus did not stop to argue with a lie, argument of error, did not say, "Now, Mr. Devil, I will argue with you about it." He said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." He spake the word and it was done. Shut it all out. You do not have to argue. No. Know God and his idea and not argue about sin. It was years before I argued. End quote. Quote, "The time will come, and I feel it will be soon, when Christian Scientists will not have to make a conscious effort in giving treatment. For through the constant desire and endeavor for a Christian life, their consciousness will have become so purified that healing will go forth from them as naturally as the perfume from flowers to those who are ready for it." End quote. Now drop arguing and hold to God. Hold to the allness of God. There is nothing else. End quote.
Thank you. All right, comments.
Well, recently I have been learning that arguing, the mental gymnastics is what I've been so used to, and it is exhausting. And when I've been letting that go and just knowing what the truth is and knowing that there's no other power but God, it's like we've entered into the, I enter into the chapter 2 of Genesis, where there's a knowledge of good and evil. And the Lord God forbid that we even touch the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So if there is no good and evil, there's only the good from Genesis 1, all God made was good, then there's nothing to fight with, nothing to argue with. And all the letter of the truth is, we need it, we do need the letter, but it's only to help us be receptive to the spirit within us. And that's where the healing is. It's not in the declaring the words and declare it. It's in the quietness. And the Bible is full of be still and know that I am God, in quietness, and in quietness and in confidence is your strength. Their strength is to be still. So our answers and the healing come in the quietness and the stillness, not in the arguing. Anyway, it's been very helpful for me.
Thank you.
Well, that was a very comprehensive explanation. Thank you. I know that when I read that watching point, it reminded me of Reverend Kratzer's article, The Law of Right Feeling, in which this article, he states that people tend to spend too much time examining their thoughts instead of carefully cultivating their feelings. And I think, in essence, he went on to say, you know, the carefully selected words, the carefully selected thoughts, they may have their place, but it's no substitute for opening your heart to God and getting the feeling that comes from him directly. We all need to know that we feel that we are in the kingdom of heaven, peace and love, and that we feel that we are faithful to truth and principle and would never deviate from any of that. I had an experience earlier this week where I was working in my front yard, and there's a neighbor who had a very young child. The dear little girl came by and said, "I like the flowers in your yard." And I thought how natural it was for this dear little one to be so pure and to simply state how she felt. She didn't have to come up with any fancy words or anything. She just told how she felt and how good it was. So,
thank you. Good point.
Yeah, I think too often I remember it was my case when I was young. Too often Christian Scientists feel like it's the words that heal. that you have to come up with the right answer or the right words or the right something that heals. And Mrs. Eddy warns us that's not what heals. It's the state of your consciousness, your oneness with God, that heals. And that this may explain why so many students of Christian Science end up doubting whether Christian Science heals, because their words don't heal. Or questioning or feeling guilty or, you know, that sort of thing. Because it's a wrong premise.
Lawrence?
Well, I often think of, you know, what if I don't have science and health, or what if I could not read? You know, so it ultimately is the knowing that God, I am one with God, you know, and holding that thought and just living that. No matter what comes up, I know, no, and my Father is here. As he says, the Bible says, I'll be with you always. So, and I was looking at this last one where it says, the last paragraph, where it says that the time will come, and I feel it will be soon, when Christian Scientists will not have to make a conscious effort in giving treatment, but through the constant desire and endeavor for a Christian life, their consciousness will have become so purified that healing will go forth from them as naturally as perfume from flowers. I thought about that, and it feels to me that, yes, again, it's this holding to the allness of God. If God is all, like some people have written, if God is all, why do we have this pain? If God is all, why do we have this disease? If God is all, why do we have this discord? And so forth. So I feel that, you know, it's not the words, like Gary just said, it's not the words. And sometimes it's as if, oh my goodness, I don't have my science and health with me, or I don't have my prose works or something. I've got to have it. What if you don't have them at all, ever? You know, so for me, I've learned a lot in the sense of, we know that God is here. We know that he preserves the good that he has created. In fact, it says he sustains and maintains the good that he has created. So that should be in the background in when we come forth to know, you know, just knowing the source completely, that our oneness with God is what defends us and what keeps us going forward, doing right and feeling right.
Thank you. Anyone else?
There's a lot of wisdom in this watching point. It talked about the salesman that approached your door, and obviously with the intent to sell you something, whether you wanted it or needed it or not. And the wisdom of not even getting into the argument with him. You know, I don't want to buy this, and I don't need to tell you why. And I'm not going to get into the back and forth to justify my position or even argue with you. It's such wisdom to not even, no one wins an argument. I know Mrs. Evans taught us that long ago. So,
yeah, very much so. No one wins an argument.
Yeah, the wisdom of not even getting into it in the first
place. Now, it's interesting, you know, the book Watches, Prayers, Arguments. Sometimes there is a place for it. There is. We've talked about it before, tuning your violin. If you're not there, if you're not feeling it, you know, then maybe declaring these truths it's very, very helpful to do that. And at times, if you feel under some kind of a bombardment where you can't think clearly, then yes, you state your truths. Sometimes if you're new to the science and you don't even know what the science is, then yes, you have to get your book out or remind yourself what that truth is. Now, as Florence says, some people just have it naturally. They feel God's presence and power, and that's wonderful. That's great. But there are others, you know, that maybe need to hear that truth. But it gets taken to extreme. And I can remember when I finally was so tired of all this talk in my head. And it was mm-hmm. like the slam in the door on the salesman. I'm just not listening to you anymore. I've had enough of this. I liken it sometimes to inviting the devil into your house and sitting down and have a nice cup of tea. And, well, what do you have to say to me? And you just sit there and listen to all this awful stuff. Well, please don't do that.
That's what Eve did.
That's what Eve did. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the story, Jeremiah building the wall, come down to the plain of Uno. Let me talk to you. I have some things I want you to know. And he said, a man such as me, come down from, I've got work to do. And that's true. Slamming the door on the guy. Who has time for this stuff? Who has time to listen to all this error? Slam it down quickly.
And Porter at the door.
Absolutely.
And now they don't, you know, they don't knock on your door. They just get you to turn on your television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something else. You know.
Emails, text messages, phone calls.
And sometimes not even that. You know, Mrs. Eddy said there'll come a time when people don't even have to enter your home in any other way. It's mental manipulation. These thoughts that come to you that are not of God. And you must be wise and wary of those and shut them down right away. So, and as Christian Scientists.
Yeah, I was thinking the closer that you're in tune with God, the closer you're staying, the more you are liable to recognize them when they come. Otherwise, gosh, there are times when things just sneak right in, don't they? And then all of a sudden you are bombarded. But when you're watching very closely, then you see the offensive salesman when it gets there and can slam it down. Because it's so much easier when you slam it down in the beginning than if you let it in the door for the tea.
I think that we should all be obeying the first commandment then. You know, if we hold to that enough, I think it becomes a background where it's like, my name is Florence. You can't call me Susan, right? It's, I know it. That's it.
Thank you.
And also, what she says here in page 160 of Miscellany, she says to live so as to keep human consciousness in constant relation with the divine, the spiritual, and the eternal is to individualize infinite power. And this is Christian Science. That also, I think, is helpful for us.
Very much. Thank you. Yeah, that was a beautiful quote we were often given to work with. Individual power comes to us. And then what Elizabeth said, too, as you know this truth more and more, then you know the false arguments when they come knocking on your door. You know right away to get rid of them. It's not a thought from God that loves you, period. Don't indulge in it. So thank you, Karen. A very important watching point indeed. So, and yesterday we had a very good Bible study. We had, about 140 of you were there. But and at the end, I was very touched by what Misha Ela said. She thanked Tom for having the courage to ask the questions. And the questions, one was, how should we speak of problems? Another, how do you maintain your trust in God when there seems to be a delay? And then, is healing ever beyond hope? And, you know, I'm sure those are things that sometimes are in the back of our mind worrying us. And as Christian Scientists, we should know those answers and know them well. And it was a very productive conversation. And again, this was in the watch last night. It was also in a prayer that Florence gave us a couple of weeks ago. You can find it in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments and also the Blue Book. But Mrs. Eddy says, there is no fatal mistake. There is no unforgivable wrong. There is no unpardonable sin. There is no permanent injury. There is no incurable disease. And there is no such thing as too late. That is the promise of Christian Science. So if whatever you're struggling with right now falls under those categories, then you can know that with God, all things are possible. Nothing's too late. Nothing's incurable. Nothing permanent injury. No. An unpardonable sin, an unforgivable wrong, or a fatal mistake. No. God never said it.
These are the false beliefs that would first try to discourage you and get you to not continue working.
Yeah, thank you. That's it.
Doubt.
Yes, to give up because you think one of those things is true. So you just give up under it. Thank you.
That's everything that drives people to suicide.
Yep. And suicide, Mrs. Eddy calls it, it's, you know, a sin. You're rejecting life. And it goes to this subject today, probation after death, that, you know, you just don't wake up into paradise. We all are working out our problems and better here and now, right? It goes on. And I wanted to share a little bit from, I guess it's All Unity of Good. I can find it now. But, you know, she says a lot about this topic. So hang on here. In Divine Science, the dying, if they die in the Lord, awake from a sense of death to a sense of life in Christ, with a knowledge of truth and love beyond what they possessed before. Because their lives have grown so far away, so far toward the stature of manhood in Christ Jesus, that they are ready for a spiritual transfiguration through their affections and understanding. Those who reach this transition called death without having rightly improved the lesson of this primary school of mortal existence and still believe in matter's reality, pleasure and pain, are not ready to understand immortality. Hence, they awake only to another sphere of experience and must pass through another probationary state before it can truly be said of them, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord. They upon whom the second death, of which we read in the Apocalypse, Revelation 26, hath no power, are those who have obeyed God's commands and have washed their robes white through the sufferings of the flesh and triumphs of spirit. Thus they have reached the goal in Divine Science by knowing him in whom they have believed. This knowledge is not the forbidden fruit of sin, sickness, and death, but it is the fruit which grows on the tree of life. This is the understanding of God, whereby man is found in the image and likeness of good, not of evil, of health, not of sickness, of life, not of death. And then man has no underived power. I love that. Everything derives from our Father. That's where we get it all. Nothing on our own. And then as soldiers of the cross, we must be brave. And let science declare the immortal status of man and deny the evidence of the material senses, which testifies that man dies. The sweet and sacred sense of the permanence of man's unity with his Maker can illumine our present being with a continual presence and power of good, opening wide the portal from death into life. And when this life shall appear, we shall be like him, and we shall go to the Father, not through death, but through life, not through error, but through truth. And then, because of these profound reasons, I urge Christians to have more faith in living than in dying. I exhort them to accept Christ's promise and unite the influence of their own thoughts with the power of his teachings in the science of being. This will interpret the divine power to human capacity, enable us to apprehend or lay hold upon that for which, as Paul says in the third chapter of Philippians, we are also apprehended of or grasped by Christ Jesus, the ever-present life which knows no death, the omnipresent spirit which knows no matter. Mrs. Eddy explains all these things so beautifully. That's unity of good. Is there no death? And she explains clearly, we must improve our life here and now. And then we go on to greater glory when we've done that. But not to cop out and think, you know, something else will be better.
Mm-hmm. So it's important to remember that, you know, when our material body, so-called, stops functioning, our consciousness continues with us, whatever that consciousness is. So you take it with you because that's all there is to you, is your consciousness. So you might as well improve it as best you can while you're here.
And we all want to finish this course with joy, right? With joy. So don't give in to any of these suggestions. And one of the worst is this belief of age. Do not give in to that. That she, Mrs. Eddy says, that's no more true than a cancer. It's a lie. And yet people who have overcome so many things give in to that. No, don't. And start now, wherever you are, whatever age you are. Don't accept these beliefs. They're not the truth. And God knows that.
Your consciousness doesn't age. And in science, your consciousness improves, right?
Right.
You're supposed to get wiser and smarter.
So, Shardell, you can read what you sent me. It's very beautiful.
Sure, I won't do all of it. It's from Science and Health, number 3, and 427. Life is real, and death is the illusion. And there's an article called Come Forth by Kate W. Buck. And then you can stop me if you want to.
No, I liked it.
When Jesus called to Lazarus to come forth, Jesus rejected any sense of the reality of what is called death. He was only conscious of life. And so he could call to Lazarus to come out from the belief of death. He always saw man as perfect, knowing that man's dominion and right activity are never interfered with. Frequently, the master called them to come forth from hunger, loss, sickness, fear, sin. As they obeyed the call, old beliefs dropped away, and the perfect man of God was revealed. In Hebrews, we read, "He that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." To diligently seek God is to long for good only. As we silence the material sense of things, we are better able to recognize the presence of the Christ, which then takes quiet possession of our being. Peace is born. Of the true sense of man appears. We discard and forget the mortal sense of personality, which has been only a shadow of the man of God's creating. All good is ours, not by striving and struggling to attain it, but by quietly and confidently knowing that we actually are the sons and daughters of God.
That's so beautiful. Again, this is the idea of be still and know that I am God, the stillness and the knowing, rather than all this fighting and struggling and carrying on, which I think Karen said at the beginning, it does. It can be exhausting, right?
It is exhausting. It is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it makes me more fearful. It made me more fearful because I did think, I'm not saying it right, or the words aren't right, and it just created more fear in me when I was doing that. So that's the opposite of what I was going for, really.
Right. Well, and see, so you're building up the error.
You're
relying on something other than God.
The words. Yeah, like you said, it's the words don't do it. It's the quiet confidence in the presence of God. That's where the healing is.
Yes.
Yeah, the words are not a magic spell.
No.
Hello.
Yes.
This bringing consciousness and consciousness is so good and makes me think about a wonderful quote I learned decades ago in Christian Science that says, the consciousness that knows what is true will never accept. And I got inspiration, like, believe what is not true. And then I was inspired to do the opposite. The consciousness that does not know the truth will ever accept or believe whatever is not true. And it's been a really big blessing to know that. Thank you.
Jeremy, read the golden text.
Psalms. As for me, I will behold thy face and righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness.
Thank you. And tell how you used that. You gave it as a test.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, for a long time, I was convinced that I was ugly. And so when I came here and started studying this and then got this in a lesson, it just made me realize that, you know, whether or not what I am humanly is really of no importance, but I have the ability through Christian Science to take this up and awaken his likeness. And that's just really just such a wonderful thing. You know, and it's so funny because for so many years, like that feeling I was ugly, it really pained me like constantly. And when I was healed, I don't know, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago I was healed of it. It became like, it was almost like neutral. I was no longer concerned about it. And that was such a relief. But on Wednesday when I was reading it, and even now, it's almost like funny to think about that, you know, because it's, the healing is so complete. It's just wonder why these things had power over me at all.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Thank you.
And now you're satisfied.
And believe me, it was such a lie. Certainly not ugly, but you see things that Era tells you, whether it's through a person or other ways, as a child or things you see, you have to make sure you're taking it back to God. Is that what God says about you? Is this a thought from God that loves me? Otherwise, we seem to battle it needlessly.
It certainly came to me for life, and I gave it all the life I had.
Uh-huh.
So. Yes.
That's why, you know, when we are in a state where we don't recognize ourselves as the image and likeness of God, we're in a dream state. You know, we're in a sleepy, dreamy state. We're not really awake. It's only when we see ourselves truly as the image and likeness of God that we wake up to who and what we really are.
Thank you.
And I find it helpful to think in this false sense of yourself as like a fictional character that you've been tricked into believing you are.
Exactly.
Very good.
Totally fiction.
Good.
Totally untrue.
And you know, if you're in a situation, all this stuff going on, it's like a soap opera, a literal soap opera on television. It's not true. Don't buy into it. Think of it that way, and then you can get yourself out of it. If you see it as a reality, again, something you're battling and so terrible and all this, you've made a reality of it. Era comes to you for life. You give it all the life it has. Mary Baker Eddy. And in a beautiful article called Go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you to Jeremy for that testimony. I was really touched by that and helped by it and realized that, you know, you think it's a harmless little thing when you look in the mirror and say, oh, look terrible, or my hair looks terrible, or whatever. And that's offensive to God, and stop doing that. And, you know, even on a lower level than, you know, Jeremy experienced it, it's not correct. So, you know, change that.
Right. Thank you should Jeremy. Say good morning. Image and likeness of God. Good morning, image and likeness of God. And then think about what that means. Thank you. Yes. Well, on this article on satisfaction sent by Carrie, it says, first it says satisfaction, meaning regenerated, sanctified, purified, and then give us this day our daily bread. If we have a little peace, a little more peace one day, a little more joy another, a little strength, power, wisdom, light, grace, and purity other days, we are having this day our daily bread and growing towards a state of satisfaction. I love that, you know, just a little every day, a little bit here, a little bit there. Longing to be better will make us strive to be so. Striving to be so strengthens our ability until the better side of life is found to be the only side. And we are transformed and renewed by the spirit of love. Strength, power, grace, and peace will unfold the realities of truth in our consciousness until dissatisfaction is swallowed up in satisfaction. So we should feel satisfied in God, not discontented and always wanting more and more and more. Someone defined happiness as wanting what you already have. So, you know, think about that. Be grateful for all that you have. And if God blesses you with more, you can be grateful for that too. Mrs. Eddy has said, and I found this in the Eustace book, in The False Prophet, that chapter, where ingratitude is the sum total of all evil. Yikes. And then the only answer is gratitude. And that's why she would say, when I see a student grateful, I know he is safe. And if you think deeply about it, very often problems you have probably start from a sense of ingratitude. You might not even think you are being ungrateful, but if you look at it in the light of day, you are. So to call it the sum total of evil is, that's not mincing words, is it? So make sure you're grateful, and that it's a state of being. When you're in the right mind, you are naturally grateful. But when you drift off into that human mind, then problems start.
And it's easy to not even be aware that you're ungrateful. Mm-hmm. If you complain about something, you know, or... Yeah.
Complaint.
And it's amazing that...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Florence.
No, it's amazing that sometimes it's like you're so into the discord that you don't see anything to be grateful for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. You're just so focused on this one healing you want. And we were once told a long time ago, what you're not grateful for, you'll end up losing eventually. You need to be grateful. Even if it's just for one little thing, be grateful for it. There's so much to be grateful for if you look for it. And that's why, thus we have writing your gratitude list every day. Thus, we have our Wednesday testimony meeting every week, where all of you should come with testimonies of gratitude. Everyone comes bearing gifts to give. So
it's a discipline.
Yes.
A discipline in life. And if you let it go here and let it go there, then next thing you know, you're wallowing in ingratitude.
Yes. And you're drifting, you're drifting out.
And it feels wonderful to give a testimony.
Yes, it does.
Or at least to show up ready. And if there's not time, then so be it. But
Yeah.
It feels really good.
And I'm grateful because we almost always go over the 9:15 time. So I'm grateful for all of you who do testify. But it's a sign you're drifting when you stop or when you don't come prepared. These are just things we learned through our 40 years here. And they've been wonderful, wonderful things to learn. And right along with what Mrs. Eddy gives us. Because why would she have the Wednesday testimony meeting if we weren't all capable of...
Mrs. Evans used to tell us, it's been a whole week since the last testimony meeting. Isn't there anything good that's happened in your life this week? Is God working in your life or not? So it kind of woke us all up.
Yeah. It becomes just a way of life. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, thank you for that. That should awake us all. Thank you for sharing that. You know, thank you for also bringing gratitude, giving thanks. It is very difficult to get it through the years. I have been doing a monthly Thanksgiving meeting and just a regular get together for giving thanks only. And I can tell you by April, people get scattered and it's hard to do it just by April. But I'm grateful that it lasts till April. But just wishing that we could bring it every month, and that's how it works that way.
Certainly no season to gratitude. And again, that was Mrs. Eddy, the one service of all the holidays we have, the one she designated was Thanksgiving, because she knew the importance of it. And again, too, joy and gratitude are essential ingredients to any healing. You have to have it. Essential is the word.
Not optional.
And you don't wait. So many people say, I'll give gratitude when I get my healing. I'll be happy and grateful after my healing. No. Now's the accepted time. Now you do it. If you're not feeling it, you get where you do feel it. Okay. You work on it and you feel it and you give it. And you'll see what wonderful things result from that. Because that is the right consciousness, that the divine consciousness we all need to be in. Otherwise, you're drifting into the mortal mind. And
Jesus was our best example, wasn't he? Before he healed people, he thanked God. Before he healed them, he thanked God.
Yes. As in the lesson with the story of Lazarus. Now, Carrie sent another couple articles about waking up, the waking up process, which is what Gary was talking about, the importance of that you're starting to sleep. When these suggestions come and you don't oppose them, you just accept them, the sleep is setting in, the sleep. And in one of the articles called Keeping Awake, it is important to use our spiritual eyes and ears to keep alert. What are you using your eyes and ears for? To look at matter? To look at sin, disease, and death? I hope not. It is important to use our spiritual eyes and ears to keep alert. In the seeming struggle with a false material sense, Era's aim is to manacle. But it asks simply if it may not hypnotize, needing no other concession, to tempt man into lethargy under some guise of comfort. A promise of relaxation, relief, or increased strength leads us to death. Through these temptations, man enters a state of stupefaction, while the truth is crying, "Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light." Mrs. Eddy commended us to make every suggestion of error, every expression of hatred or variance, a cue to loving and corrective spiritual thought, so that we can reach the stage where all things work together for good. And that's why she also has said, you know, better to be working out some problem where you're working with the truth and everything. Oh, everything's lovely. We used to have that cartoon picture on our bulletin board upstairs of the man on a raft, you know, with his hands behind his head, and he's so happy and peaceful, and he's about ready to go over a waterfall.
A very steep one.
But he thought everything was fine. So awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead. And any kind of a sleep is a form of death. And anytime we overcome any error, we are overcoming the belief of death, because that's where it's leading to get you accept these false beliefs, take you off the straight and narrow. And then another article, Awake Thou That Sleepest. It has an interesting story that I don't think I ever knew about Sir Galahad. It says, in Mr. Abbey's pictorial setting of the legend of Sir Galahad and the Holy Grail, he has very successfully portrayed in the knight's pose and expression his utter discomfiture at the moment when he finds that he has forgotten the magical word by which he was to have broken the spell of spiritual death that bound King Amfortas with all the inmates of the castle of the Grail. At that moment, his call, his consecration, his high purpose, his years of devoted preparation for the demands of knighthood all counted for naught, because he had not retained right consciousness. Until this awakening was realized, his holy quest must fail, and there was left him only the remembrance of lost opportunity and the companionship of self-reproach. The story reminds us of the frequent scriptural references to this mortal life as a sleep and a forgetting, and of the teachings of Christian Science that whatever of weakness and inadequacy may characterize our present Christian endeavor, it is explained by our fearsome forgetfulness, the feebleness of our grasp upon fundamental truths of being, the allness of God and his manifestation, the dignity and authority of man, the nothingness of evil, and the powerlessness of mesmeric belief in the presence of spiritual understanding. So I thought that was interesting. I guess this knight had been good all his life, and the last minute he had to remember some word he couldn't remember. So let's not be there. That's why we go over these things over and over, so we don't forget. We don't forget our testimonies, and we stay awake. And then at a time when we need it, it's right there for us. We're not floundering around and saying, oh, gee, I can't remember a thing, and error must be true. No. So we stay awake. We keep using this truth because it's so powerful. I don't know. I thought maybe I'd have Luann just tell briefly, because Luann had a kind of an after-death experience, right? And she's here today.
Back when I was just started working, maybe my 20s or something. I don't remember. I had a situation where I came home from work and I didn't feel well. So I laid down on the bed. And then I felt like I wasn't even breathing anymore. Like I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get any air in. And then I just noticed that I was like looking back at my body and floating around the room. So I wanted to go farther and go out the door. I got scared at first. First I was like trying to get back to my body, and then I said, no, wait, I'm going to take advantage of this. I want to see where this goes. So I went out of the room and I was following along the ceiling to the top of the staircase and kind of going down the staircase. And I could see like on the walls were all kinds of colors and things. And then I kind of got scared after that. And I was thinking, boy, if I go out the door, am I going to just float up into space somewhere? But I heard a big voice that said, go back. And I felt like when I looked at my body, it felt like it was made of water. And so I just started swimming and moving my arms like I was swimming. And I went back up the stairs and went back to my room. And then I just woke up. But I felt like I was looking, like not through my eyesight, but looking out into the world through just, I don't know, I guess now I would explain it as consciousness. Because I, at the time, it felt like I was just a little person sitting inside my eyeball looking out through this window. I wasn't actually looking through my eyes. And it was pretty amazing experience. And then after that, I felt like, you know, if I was to commit suicide or something like that, then I would just still be alive, that my work would be here on Earth, you know. I'd have to finish my work here on Earth before anything happened to me. So there's really no point in committing suicide because I'd just be in that state of mind. It'd just give me a view of what would happen if you did pass.
Well, thank you. And I guess there have been many others who've had similar views. There is no death. So let's work out things here and now. And Gary will close now.
This is from an article entitled True Humility from the 1903 journal. And it's an editorial. And they write, in these days of social unrest, of sharp and almost merciless competition for personal supremacy in all lines of human endeavor, commercial, political, and religious, the world can listen to no better counsel than that of Paul to the Ephesians, quote, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Humility is wholly apart from the false sense dominated by fear and timidity, which shrinks from the private and public duties and responsibilities of daily life, and which frequently finds expression in sensitiveness, selfishness, and helplessness. True humility has ever been characteristic of the faithful followers of Jesus. It is a normal, harmonious condition of consciousness, and is manifested in true brotherliness, unselfish love, untiring energy. It is satisfied and amply rewarded with the well done of spirit, and is not affected by the plaudits of men. If need be, it is aggressive to the point of daring, courageous to the extreme of wisdom, meek to the limit of forbearance. It has been described by an old writer as a virtue which has a calmness of spirit and a world of other blessings attending upon it. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.